Good evening and welcome to Wednesday's Late Debate as another day of drama draws to a close. Joining us tonight we have Lorraine Clifford-Lee, Fianna Fáil Senator and Spokesperson on Health, Padraig Tobin, Aonth Thú Party Leader and TD for Meath West, Labour Party Senator Annie Hoey, Spokesperson on Higher Education, Innovation and Research, John Downing, Political Correspondent with the Irish Independent, and in our Waterford studio we have former Independent TD and Minister of State John Halligan. Now we want to hear from you, so do please get in touch. You can text us on 51551. You can email latedebate@rte.ie or tweet to @latedebaterte. Now, the government was plunged into yet another political maelstrom today as it emerged that coding errors cast doubt on the calculated grades of thousands of Leaving Cert students. Here's Education Minister Norma Foley on this calculated error.
On behalf of the Department of Education and Skills, I want to apologise sincerely to our Leaving Certificate students for the situation we are now in and for the upset it will cause. I want to acknowledge that students have had an exceptionally difficult year. They don't need this upset and dismay. I really do appreciate that.
And that was the Education Minister, Norma Foley, today. Lorraine Clifford-Lee, do we know yet how this was caught? As in, why were they checking the code last week and to discover this?
I don't know the answer to that, Katie. I think, you know, it might be something that they do as standard practice, but I think the important point to make is that the error was caught, it was brought to the minister's attention, and a separate process, a separate independent process has been gone through now to make sure that that all affected students are identified.
You see, I just wondered, because there was such an unusually high number of appeals that had been lodged, and we know, of course, as well, that there was court cases, and one presumes there would be discovery being done in relation to those court cases. So I wonder, is there any suggestion that it was as part of that process that they had to go back over the algorithm and how it worked?
Well, there are appeals every year, and there are students that are upgraded every year.
Yeah, but they don't normally have an algorithm that they're going back to.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm sure that's something that we will find out over the coming days. But I think the important point at the moment to make is that no student will be disadvantaged as a result of this. Now, I know it's been an exceptionally difficult year.
No, hang on, I have to stop you there, because no student will be disadvantaged in one breath, and then in the next breath we hear from the Irish Universities Association that some courses are simply, there aren't any more space. So if you are a student who wants a place on that course, you will be severely disadvantaged.
Well, every year students are upgraded, and last year there was approximately 600 students that received a higher offer as a result of an upgrade, and all but a handful were facilitated. And I'm sure that's going to happen this time. And the minister has said that funds will be put in place to make sure every student, as practically possible, will be offered their correct place in college this year. Well, but, you know, that's no consolation to people tonight who are very worried and anxious and wondering if they fall in within that cohort, will they be offered a higher college place? And it's been an exceptionally distressing year for everybody in the country, but particularly the Leaving Cert students. And I know that morale is very low among students tonight, but I think the minister offered a very fulsome apology, and everything has been done to rectify this situation.
Yeah, so like it's very seldom that you're left speechless in the political space, and it's just what's happened to the class of 2020 is one of those things that just leave you speechless, because they have been through so much with regards to the very start, having Leaving Cert postponed, and then new systems to be used, etc. The government said there would be an accurate, reliable and fair process for the Leaving Cert. And it's obviously true that it's not accurate. There has been 6,500 at least students that have been given an inaccurate grade with regards to this. And it's not fair to say that students are not going to suffer from this. There will be students who have got courses done in Cork University, not their first choice, who have paid for accommodation, etc., who may not be lucky enough to get in this year to Galway University, which may be their first choice, and have to go through all of that difficulty. And then there will be students who simply won't get access to their preferred choice this year, as well as the students that are going to sit the Leaving Cert in November, who also have to take a year out of their education before they get into their desired course. And then at the back of this, there's going to be a lot of students who are going to be financially, stuffed as a result of what's happened so far. And what happens there? Does the state come into play and the state provide the finance in that situation? Or does the company who is involved in this, we're told it's the company's fault with regards to what's happened extent.
Yeah, let's just, that's an interesting point actually, that who ultimately will be held responsible for this. Because it strikes me that if it's a coding error, it wasn't a typo as such, but surely a code is written on instruction. And the code that was put into this, the instructions that was put into this algorithm was to take these the wrong things into
it appears that the company itself was negligent, and
let's be very careful there now, because actually that wasn't crystal clear in terms of how it was presented today. So we haven't heard from the company itself.
I'll withdraw that comment, but if it is a thing, we would have to see the contract that was signed between this company and the
Department. But could it be a miscommunication between the department and this company? And could the miscommunication be errors be on the department side, is what I'm asking.
That's information that we don't have at the moment. And there is a full external investigation going on at the moment, and I'm sure that information will come to light over the coming days.
We don't know who's at fault here, but the impression has been given to a certain extent that it's not necessarily the government's fault, that actually, but we shouldn't judge at this stage because it would be unfair. But I spoke to a senior teacher today who said that she didn't realise that only the two best subjects outside of the three, core subjects were going to be analysed. In this case, it looks like the two worst subjects in the junior cert were actually included with the three core subjects. And that has created the problem.
Yeah, because we got information today that we never got. We people had been looking for what exactly is taken into account in this algorithm and what kind of weighting is given to various elements of it. Annie, were you aware of this level of detail on it until today?
No, absolutely not. And I think that's part of the problem, in that the way this shouldn't have been discovered when Alan Kelly asked the Taoiseach a question.
Yeah, can I ask you about that? Was he tipped off by somebody in the department about that? Because it seemed to tee up so perfectly. Micheál Martin looked like he was almost waiting for somebody to ask him.
Well, it had nothing to do with Alan Kelly asking the question. That the press conference was organised yesterday.
Yeah, so I'm still confused about why that press conference hadn't been announced at that point, because that was just a few hours before the press conference.
Well, I think that's normal practice. So, I don't think press conferences are given a whole pile of time.
But generally more than a couple of hours.
Well, I think the press conference took place at 4 o'clock and it was announced earlier on, I think before lunchtime today. I don't have the exact time, but that's normal standard practice.
Did somebody tip Alan Kelly off?
I don't know how Alan Kelly gets his information, but it doesn't matter. That's not how it should have been announced. Yeah. That shouldn't have sent a shockwave through the country. It shouldn't have sent a shockwave through students. It shouldn't have sent a shockwave through the unions. The representative bodies didn't know, USI, our second level students' unions, the IUA. None of these bodies who are going to have to deal with the fallout of this knew anything about it until it exploded today. And I don't know if that's good enough, that for over a week that this information has been sat on. And I appreciate that, efforts were being done to ensure that there was a robust response to this. But I mean, a week is a lifetime in terms of planning and trying to get your life together. And, as Padder has mentioned, students are making decisions about moving down to college. We've only just last week had 2 weeks of effectively college suspended, students studying from home. Everything is already extremely difficult, never mind for the incoming first year cohort who are now going to have to decide. There was a guidance counsellor today saying, well, look, if you're in a course, stick with it for the year, and then if you're offered something else, go on ahead. But sure, there's consequences for that. That means they could lose
the government
their grant.
Has said the government has clarified this evening that if that scenario happens, it won't impact on the grant or the fees. But I think,
the other scenario that Padder mentioned there, that you have just forked out for a massive deposit and
a quarter of years for
forward rent, and suddenly your child or yourself, you're in the wrong city now.
Absolutely.
Will the government reimburse students for that money?
I'd like to see the government actually make a statement on that. I would hope they would. But I think we have to be very careful that we as politicians and broadcasters don't overhype this. There are some very anxious people out there at the moment. And I think Reuben Murray, who is the representative of secondary school students in Ireland, was on the radio this evening, and he was very, very calm and logical about it. And he said, look, the students just want this not to drag on. He wants the process to be dealt with as speedily and as readily as possible, and for the results to issue and the situation to be rectified.
But Claire, the idea that we're talking about overhype,
we have to be careful that we don't, and that we don't feed into anything like that over the coming days and make things more distressing for the people impacted.
Talk about hype. Yesterday we had a Fianna Fáil senator in Galway saying that the army needs to be brought in because of students, the same students probably who sat the Leaving Cert, collecting outside. And, you know, if there was any hype, I think that's where the hype laid. Where do we go from here is a big question. For me, we can't do this again. This type of system can never be used again. We need to allow children to sit the Leaving Cert. The Leaving Cert could have gone ahead this year. The Leaving Cert would have come to an end roughly at the same time the restrictions were lifted. And the idea that, you know, I know in my secondary school, Colin O'Rourke is actually the principal of that school, and they told me that they had the classrooms and space for the Leaving Cert to be sat. All they needed was extra invigilators to make it happen.
Maybe his school did.
The second point I would make here as well, no wonder some of the universities are saying that they're not going to have the spaces to provide for these students, because the government have been underfunding the universities for youngs.
Okay, I want to bring in John Halligan.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of points here. First of all, I do agree with Pater. I think that in hindsight, and I know hindsight is a great thing, the Leaving Cert probably could have gone ahead. We all knew, and as I was finishing up as minister, we knew that we were going to have problems with the calculated grade system. Very many students wanted it, some didn't. Some wanted to sit the exam. Some thought it was unfair. If some of the grades went back to the junior cert, was it an issue with some that, okay, maybe I didn't do so well in the junior cert, but 2 years after that I could have done better? But anyway, I think there's another issue here, and that is that how this error was made. And remember that this algorithm, this was an implementable instruction to perform a computation that was given to the computers, if you like, by this Canadian company. So we need to find out what the instructions were. It's as simple as that. It's a scientific...
That was the point we were raising there.
It's science to find out the rules to be followed in calculation or solving problem operations. That's what an algorithm is. And I think that when this investigation is followed through, we need to know what instructions were given from the department here to the Canadian company. And where was the error then with the two, talking about the two lowest grades from junior cert? And until we find that out, we don't know who made the error. Was it made from the department here, or was it made, it wasn't made by the computer, because the computer only got the information that it was given.
But you worked with this department. That was one of your briefs when you were Minister of State. Would it surprise you? I mean, what's the kind of culture in this department in terms of
I think
being meticulous? And
they are very meticulous, but I think that, I have some sympathy for the present minister, because she came in at a difficult time and she was obliged to take advice and maybe instructions, I don't know, from the civil servants in that department. An example of that would be when I came into that department, I was dealing with school transport, 117,000 children, 14,000 special needs children, 30,000 concessionary children, thousands of vehicles, millions of miles, carers and so on. And it was a nightmare. And you really had, in the initial stages, to take advice from the people who knew how to do this job. So I think that it's a little unfortunate that she's come into the job at a very difficult time. And it's a huge brief. I mean, I was a junior minister and my brief was big enough, but the brief for a senior minister is colossal. So it was difficult, and it required me to go to meeting after meeting. I remember in the summer months when everybody was on holidays, we were in the Dáil with my staff trying to get Garda clearance, trying to deal with special needs children, trying to get carers, sometimes two carers in a car. And we needed the civil service to give us proper information. And what I always insisted on was absolute, total, accurate information as to how a system worked. And I also insisted on give me good, bad and indifferent, and how do we work through problems that we will have. I found dealing with the calculated grades, and it was at the end of my term, I was still going to ministerial meetings, management meetings, that this was something that I thought a lot more effort and thought should have been put into it, knowing that the difficulty we might have had down the line with it. Is it the only thing?
So
we
were in there, you were still in that department,
I was, yes.
Up until July.
That's right. Yes, I was, yes.
And what, like, are you saying that there wasn't enough focus on what was going to be a
there was,
huge
but I think,
issue?
There was, but I think, to be fair, again, you have to consider that nobody could understand or come to terms with what we were facing with having to close schools, close universities, and then shut down exams. And that was something new to everybody, to ministers, to their advisors, to people in that department, that this is something new that we've never had to deal with before. And
did you have any dealings with this company?
No, I didn't. No, I'd never heard of them until during the week, to be honest with you.
Polymetric. Okay, stay there, John. I want to bring in the other John Downing. John, we're getting a lot of texts in, a lot of reaction to this talking. They're saying coding should never have been outsourced. Most of the things that went wrong have gone wrong in the public is public sector outsourcing, cervical smear, nursing homes, direct provision. That's from Orla. The calculated grades must not leave anyone behind. They need to make amends for everyone. It's easy to say you understand without doing anything. And then this one, surely the minister's speech should have begun with I have tendered my resignation as a minister and a TD. Now, John Halligan acknowledging there that this was not this was something that was landed on this minister, really.
Yeah, I mean, we have to see the human side of her predicament. Up to February the 9th last, she was a little known county councillor who had one time run for the Dáil. She's not a very experienced politician at this level, though she has very wide experience of politics. But I have to say, she does not inspire confidence, and her presentation this evening did not inspire confidence. And for Senator Lorraine Clifford Lee to talk about us not hyping these things, it is impossible to exaggerate what has been presented to us today.
Great.
And we're looking at a situation where if you extrapolate from, we're told 6,500 Leaving Cert students are in this situation. We're told they will be treated as though it were a successful appeal. So if you extrapolate from figures last year, and, you know, to quicken up here, you're talking about potentially 1,200 students entitled to a place in a higher preference to what they currently have and are committed to. So as you began at the outset there, where are these places going to come from? Because the colleges are already stuffed. Mm. They have been trying to manufacture places going back over the weeks. It's yet another calamity afflicting this coalition. It is very difficult to have confidence in this government at any level, really.
It does feel, John, though, doesn't it, that Micheál Martin simply cannot catch a break.
That is true, yes. And this very much, again, there have been problems since this government came into office on the 27th of June. And more of them, the most recent one related to Fine Gael, the Michael Darcy job debacle. But this again impacts on Fianna Fáil and shows you know, shows a weakness, a team weakness, really.
You make your own luck to a certain extent. Do you know what I mean? So a lot of the problems that Micheál Martin has endured have been self-created and self-inflicted.
Well, I mean, if we look at some of those issues, there was the Barry Cowan issue, which came out of nowhere.
Yeah, but like, there's an issue of management there too. Do you know what I mean? If you surround yourself with a particular team and you don't know the depth and the quality of that team, there's a question of management around that. And just,
Heather, I have to interrupt you there. I mean,
you would.
I do have to interrupt you there. We're forgetting here that Norma Foley successfully oversaw the reopening of the schools with thousands, hundreds of thousands of kids, my own included, went back to school in a calm, successful fashion. And that has been an overwhelming success.
And I will grant that. There's no point in this and being petty around this. That was a big achievement for a new
really,
minister.
And really, up until a few hours ago, we thought that the Leaving Cert calculated grades had actually been carried off with some aplomb as well.
But with regards to this particular issue, the jury is out with regards Norma Foley. Until we know exactly where the fault lies in this, does it lie with a particular company or does it lie within the management of the department, then we will know exactly who's at fault. But the key issue here is to make sure that students are not stuffed financially as a result
Absolutely.
Of what happened.
Absolutely, and not, the and government just, has been very swift
not just
in dealing
with
that
they
particular
have,
issue.
They haven't mentioned rent and all the other costs that go into
Absolutely,
this.
And I would hope that the Minister and the Taoiseach would actually make a statement in that regard, and I expect them to.
But it's not just financial, though. I mean, I think a huge part of this has to be the extraordinary levels of anxiety and stress
Absolutely.
That have been visited upon
Look, and
people
I,
who are already in a very, every normal Leaving Cert year, it's one of the most anxious
Absolutely.
And stressful years of a young
know.
Person's life. And what has been visited on this class is really...
But we were in unprecedented times, and I'm sure Annie and Pather would have dealt with students in their own constituency that were having problems accessing broadband. There was a real issue of disadvantaged students and people outside main urban centres being at a disadvantage. So if we had pressed ahead with the traditional Leaving Cert, that would have presented a whole other set of problems. And look, it wasn't ideal. And we were dealing with a pandemic in unprecedented times. We did the best we could. And unfortunately, that this error has occurred. But the 6,500 approximately students who were impacted will not be disadvantaged.
You do keep saying that.
Yes.
But we know that you cannot guarantee that as we sit here tonight. We know what Jim Miley from the Universities Association has told us.
Mm-hmm.
We know what the Minister acknowledged earlier this evening, which was
but extra
it won't
funding
be
will
disadvantaged
be made available.
if at all possible.
But what
we're being told by the universities is that it will not be possible. There isn't enough capacity.
And there's
It's
not a matter of funding, we're told. There simply isn't room in some of those courses to incorporate.
That's exactly it. I heard Simon Harris saying that we could make another 1,000 places available. That might not be possible. Sounds good, and it would be the right thing to do.
This is Simon Harris from a tweet this evening. I just want students from the class of 2020 to know that we will move mountains to help ensure extra places needed are provided. I've made it clear to the HEA that everyone must and will pull together to find solutions. We will get there, must be solutions focused. But as I say, if the University Association is saying on some courses there simply isn't any more space.
Well, 600 places were found last year.
But that wasn't on top of the many thousands of places that have already been put into the system this year.
Cracking. The system is about to burst. The Castles report was launched 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We keep talking about this metaphorical road that we're running out of. Like the universities, the IOTs and the TUs have been running on empty for a number of years. Like it is unreasonable to turn around.
We would agree with that in Fianna Fáil. Like we have been saying that exactly. We have just entered government in the past couple of months and we are putting extra funding and we will put extra funding going forward for the duration of this government. Absolutely, things aren't perfect, but we are going to do our absolute best with regards to education. Fianna Fáil has always been very, very strong in education.
Okay, just the last couple of texts before we move on from this. I get that the 2020 class has been handed a bad deal, as have each and every one of us. Things go wrong. The minister did not do this on purpose. You're all being petty. I feel it doesn't mean that she has to resign. Well, I don't think anyone, actually, to be fair, has suggested here in the studio. That was a texter that I had read out. We're all stressed. Christ, move on from the Leaving Cert students. We are all suffering in some way, says Patricia. Another one tells me that Norma Foley, this is
A tweet, Norma Foley didn't open schools successfully. Principals, teachers, SNA secretaries and janitors opened schools successfully.
Absolutely. It was a team effort.
So we will, as I said, this one is going to run and run, but we'll leave it there for tonight because I want to move on to COVID and where we are today. 429 confirmed cases today. Dr. Ronan Glenn issued a very stark warning at this evening's briefing.
The window of opportunity for it not to be a national issue is closing. And that's why I'm appealing to all sectors, all counties, all organisations, all parts of society to act like it's the end of February 2020.
And that was a Dr. Ronan Glenn, act like we're back at in February. And certainly looking at the Dublin numbers and what he was saying about Dublin today, it does look highly unlikely, Lorraine, that we are going to be able to come off level three next week.
Yeah, that is the situation. Very, very stark figures again this evening for Dublin and for the rest of the country, but I think particularly in Dublin. It's hard to see when this is going to drop for us here in Dublin.
And I should say, not because we're not to be Dublin-centric about it, but the word is that it's not quite at the same level around the country, but that the numbers are going absolutely in the same wrong direction all over the country. But I just want to ask one particular thing, because Ronan Glenn mentioned it this morning at the committee briefing, or at the committee, the Oversight Committee hearings, that the amount of traffic, looking at the amount of traffic that's on the roads in the morning, that people aren't here, because go back to February, March, April, it was, you know, tumbleweed on the roads.
Was shut down in March and April, and we have, thankfully, the retail shops back open. But I do feel a lot of people are back in offices when they don't particularly need to be back in offices. I think a lot of people wanted to get back, even if it's just a couple of days a week, and, you know, for their own particular reasons, maybe their own mental health reasons or other reasons that they're back doing that. But I think we all around the country, but particularly in Dublin, we need to redouble our efforts and brace ourselves.
There's no doubt that people need to be cautious, need to be careful, need to do the simple things right. And working from home is one of the logical simple things to do. But I am struck by the fact that today 24 people died of cancer. 480 people got cancer today. Today 27 people died of a heart attack or a stroke today. And that 27 people is actually more than the amount of people who have died of COVID this month. I believe that COVID is a serious threat and we have to deal with it seriously. But I also believe that all the other fatal illnesses in the state are serious threats and have to be equally treated. And I don't believe they are equally treated.
No, they're not.
About 50% of the health service, according to Stephen Donnelly, has been taken out of normal practice and been focused on COVID. I know of a doctor, a Dublin doctor, who told me that thankfully none of his patients have died from COVID. He has three patients who have had cancer. They've had delayed diagnosis, delayed treatment, and as a result, he believes they're not going to make it.
And today, the minister actually announced a doubling of public health public health workers the next year focus on the public health area.
And sorry, Lorraine, I just wanted to make the point first. But Stephen Donnelly mentioned that in the winter plan that he was going to invest €600 million in the winter plan. The winter plan is designed to achieve 95% of the cancer screening that was achieved last year. We have 200,000 women currently in a backlog of screening in this country currently. That backlog is not going to be touched with regards getting through the next year. So, you know, I've asked the government a number of times, have they measured the results of the restrictions on society, on jobs, on mental health, on all the other elements of society? And
are you advocating herd immunity then?
No, I'm not.
Well, what are you advocating? It sounds like it.
I'm advocating that we live with some level of proportion, some level of balance.
But well, we are living with
proportion. Businesses are being massacred currently through the... I was speaking on child poverty today. The biggest threat...
What are you suggesting?
That is a really key question.
My suggestion is that we make sure that the health service also deals with all the other elements that are affecting people. Secondly, the severe restrictions should be for about making sure that the health service is not overrun. Because we were told that the idea of severe restrictions is to flatten the curve and make sure that the health service is not overrun. When the health service is not being overrun, we shouldn't be going. We shouldn't be moving to higher restriction levels. In my view, because we have a 30 billion euro deficit.
But you're not
this
offering
year.
Any solution.
That 30
Pather.
Billion euro deficit this year is going to be added to already one
okay,
of
you're
the
not
highest.
Making any
so
sense
I'm
on it.
Trying to. I'm trying to get to the bottom of what you think we should be doing differently here.
Well,
so
well,
do you think well, that the level all, 3 restrictions should be lifted in Dublin? Is that what you're saying now?
No, but I honestly don't want the rest of the countries to start going into deeper restrictions given the level of stress on the health service. I think the level of stress on the health service, the level of people in ICU, the level of people going into the hospitals should be the biggest key indicator for the decisions
well,
we make.
Well, we saw today, there was, I think the figure today is 130 people now in hospital and I'm not sure there is 19 or 20 people in ICU.
Yeah, there are way more people in hospital for way more other fatal illnesses in this country
but
at the moment.
This sounds very dangerous.
That we should not have restrictions because there is more people in hospital with other diseases than with COVID.
You
have
speed up move that. I want to clarify the backlog for the cervical check.
In case people give the wrong impression of what I'm saying here. What I'm saying is we have to be careful. We have to tackle this. We need to reduce the numbers. But I'm also saying there are serious side effects to the decisions that we're making. And those side effects, like for example, I asked the government to research what was the effect on the economy, on poverty, on mortality and morbidity of the decisions we're making. Had they done any research in that? They said no. The HSE has done no research on the level of mortality and morbidity of the decisions that they're making. That means this is not evidence-based actions.
Is. And, you know, I am concerned about the backlog and the cervical check numbers. I'm one of the women that was due a smear a number of months ago and I don't know when I'm going to get that. I am concerned about the breast check widening out the waiting period. But Pather is just being populist here. He's not offering any solutions. He's talking about less severe restrictions and, you know, throwing in emotive things about cervical check and the breast check and lots of other services. But he is not offering any solutions. He's not offering any protection. No, if you'd let me finish.
Kate,
no,
Pather,
please.
Myself.
Please.
Okay, just let Lorraine finish and then I'll bring you in.
Okay,
Pather, you've had a very good run there now, in fairness.
But what we're doing is to try and protect as best we can, and we're learning along with this. This is a very new virus. But what we're trying to do is to protect frontline workers, and they are doing their very, very level best. But we can't say that we should have lighter restrictions, let the virus run riot in society. You're not offering any solutions to that. You sound extremely populist, and it's extremely worrying that a leader of a political party would be offering such populism.
Well, first of all, Pather, I'll let you back in,
but John has been trying to get in for a while. John Halligan.
Yeah, if I could make a couple of points, first of all. To a degree, Pather is correct in what has happened outside of COVID. Excessive alcohol abuse, violence in the home has increased, depression, self-harm, essential health care intervention has dropped down considerably. And of course, the economy, which is in free fall, people with mortgage problems, health problems because of mortgage problems, no work and so on. The difficulty here is that and the solutions should not be offered by Pather or I or anybody else on the panel here. We need to, first of all, find out what flattening the curve is. Nobody's been able to say this. The scientists have not been able to tell us, I believe, Neffet in particular, and I've been saying this. Is flattening the curve eliminating the virus? Because if it is, that's fine, and the virus is gone.
No, but that is not what flattening the curve is.
They need to be more...
But they have been very explicit about that.
That's not their objective either.
Yes.
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's not. Right. It has never been...
Never been the government's objective to get rid of this.
If I could just continue, Katie. Yeah. What needs to be done is this, in my view, until we find a vaccine, until we find an antibody, until we deal with this, which may take months, may take a year, and it may take a couple of years to get into two-thirds of society. We may very well have to find some solution of policy of living with the virus. I think that needs to be debated. There isn't anything wrong with saying that. Nobody is talking about not wearing masks. I'm not certainly not talking about it. Or just not behaving in a proper way of washing your hands, keeping your social distance and so on. But the question here is that with all of these issues we have, these health issues associated or outside of dealing with the coronavirus, that if we don't, for instance, find a vaccine, vaccine. It took us years to get one for measles, polio and so on. That if we don't find a vaccine, do we continually shut down society year after year, month after month? I think that we need to start debating, and I'm not a scientist, although I deal in science when I was dealing with research and development, but we need to start talking about how do we deal with this virus. We may very well have to deal with another virus that may come along in 20 years' time, 10 years' time, 100 years' time, but until we do find a vaccine, there doesn't seem to be a lot of discussion among anybody as to how do we deal with the virus? I'm saying, do we continually? I don't think it would be possible. I think
but you
would
see a lot of people. Can I put to you, John, and as I would put to Pather as well, that a lot of people would say we have to do something else. There has to be a better way than shutting down society.
Is a way
we
of
have to have more
illness.
Testing and tracing. But ultimately, beyond knowing what we don't like. There is very limited options being put forward
we probably should look at the Swedish model. We should look at the Swedish model and other models. So I'm not saying that that's correct. And by the way, I'm not saying that I don't agree with the herd thing. Herd immunity. But what I am saying is this, that, and again, I think this is relevant to all of us and all in society here, and to our very fine scientists, and I know many of them, I've dealt with them in research and innovation. But do we go into next year again with more health problems, depression, self-harm, excessive alcohol abuse by shutting down society every so often? I'm not saying we won't have to do that, but we must try and develop a scientific solution to dealing with the virus. We can't eradicate it.
Yeah, but if you look at where we are now today, and look at the numbers in Dublin, look at the numbers in various other counties that are a tipping point around the country. If we don't move into further restrictions in those places, well, we know what's going to happen.
But there is a different mortality rate with regards to numbers now than there was back in March and April, and partially because the treatment is far superior and we know much more about how to treat people in these situations.
Well, again, I'm not a scientist, but I can only put you what Professor Philip Nolan said when this was put to him today. You may have heard him earlier on, and he said you would be very ill-advised to underestimate.
But mortality isn't the only indicator here. Some people are very, very ill and with long-term effects, and we don't know what long-term effects this will have in the distant future as well. So it's really, really not a disease that you want to get.
But my worry is this, is we're not measuring the rest of the damage that's done to the rest of the country. And that's my worry.
I want to put that to Annie, because that is a fair point, I do think, that in this debate, we do need to know what's happening to all the other bits of the health service
society.
To all the other bits of society.
Absolutely. And I would be astonished to believe that we would continue on throughout this for the next 2-3 years without these things being looked at. And there's certainly, I'm sure, academics and researchers who are very eager to
There's been no research by the government.
And I believe that there should be. I don't know actually that there's anyone here saying that there shouldn't be research looking at these things. But we are in an unprecedented thing. The last time we had something like this happen was the Spanish flu. Do you know what I mean? We've never lived through this before. We are only 6 months into it, and people are trying their level best to deal with this in the best way they can. And there's been lots of different countries who've done lots of different things, some successfully, some not so successfully. And I suppose we are trying to, you know, when we talk about living alongside this, what do people mean by that? Living alongside this, and a few people drop off on the way, like, that's not how, you know, it's a very easy way to say, like, oh, we'll just live alongside it and we'll figure it out. Like, people, like, there are scientists
Well, who do you sacrifice then?
That decision has already been made, Katie. There's already a decision. People who have cancer in this country are not getting their treatment.
As a nurse working through this, I can assure you that we are still dealing with everything else. We're dealing with COVID on top of everything else.
Well, the Minister for Health has said between 20% and 50% of the capacity within the health service has been taken out to deal with COVID. I'm not saying there isn't a necessity for restrictions, and there may even be necessity for more. But all I'm saying is that the state has a responsibility to research the level of mortality and morbidity and damage that's been done to the rest of the state, so that we know I have asked two ministers for health. I've asked Simon Harris to do this, and I've asked Paul Reid, will he do this? And I've asked the new minister.
Six months into a pandemic, it was absolutely unprecedented. And I think the government and the previous government have worked exceptionally hard, and the officials in their departments have worked exceptionally hard. The innovation and the adjustments that right across Irish society in state agencies and private companies has been phenomenal. And I'm sure that study will be done, Pather. But
the NHS, okay, 2 months after the illness broke out, started to do
I don't think they're a model for us to follow.
But
now,
all I'm saying is they started to research the amount of fatalities that would happen due to cancer because of what's happened there. They have done the studies.
But also, should we not be talking about a strategy? Is there something wrong about talking about a strategy of living with the virus if we cannot find a cure? Where is that strategy being discussed?
It's not being discussed.
Where has
it been discussed by
It strikes
scientists?
Me, Katie.
Let John Downing in there for a moment.
You know, what's screaming out at me here is we're having this discussion now on the day in which the COVID-19 Oireachtas Committee has been disbanded. It's held its last meeting. Fatefully, Dr. Ronan Glynn came in and delivered some rather grim news. But it's been going since May. It was far from perfect, but I found its proceedings very interesting. Now we're told that its work will be dispersed across all the new Dáil committees. There are 14 of them. If you divide responsibility like that, it usually just falls between the cracks. I mean, I suppose realistically it will go health, justice, education, agriculture and social protection. But there is a whole other side to the points that were made there by Pather Tobin and by John Halligan. We cannot, as a nation, just entirely go to bed for another 6 months when this flares up again. And there is the whole other side. I mean, I understand the model. The experts give their advice. The politicians follow, the political leaders follow it, and they make their decisions. But these decisions have huge impact on all the ordinary citizens. We're at least entitled to know why, and to have answers to some of the sort of stranger questions that would pop into our head. Why didn't you ever think of doing it some other way? So I think really this COVID committee, chaired by Michael McNamara, I think it's a loss, and I think it's a serious error to get rid of it.
It's kind of extraordinary, actually. I was really surprised when I only realised this week that this was the last sittings of this. Have a listen to Michael McDougall. He was on with Brian Dobson on the news at 1 today, and he was again on this issue of oversight and, you know, who is... you know, the way these decisions are being taken.
Ministers are making decisions to close down entire regions of the country in some respects, or entire sectors of the economy in another sense. And this is done by a statutory instrument. And the only thing that the two houses of the Oireachtas can do is to annul those statutory instruments. They can't debate them before they're made. They can't amend them in any way. They can't ask, say, a minister precisely why is it sensible to open wet bars in Wicklow and to close bars serving food down in Shankill Hill in Dublin. We're effectively being run by decrees in the form of statutory instruments.
Yeah, Lorraine, there is a discussion to be had here about accountability for decisions that have massive impacts on so many people, and a lot of questions being asked about what evidence, where is the evidence for all these individual decisions, and why did you go this way and not that way?
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are today, as you say, the last day of that COVID committee, oversight committee sitting, and that point that Michael McDougall was making, that this is a government by statutory instrument, by decree.
Well, I think, you know, the work the COVID committee did was very, very good work, and it was very welcome, and it helped give kind of structure to the work when we were kind of in that starting phase. But for example, I'm on the health committee. We're having our first meeting in the morning, so we will be taking over that work. And there was a fear that duplication would be happening across Leinster House. All the committees are up and running now at this stage, and that very important work. And that this is part of living with COVID.
This is your first. Is that the first meeting of the health committee? Yeah.
Yeah, it is. All the committees are kind of meeting for the first time this week.
But won't you be having to worry about all those other health issues that Pat was talking about? So, you know, do you really have the time and the space to be taking on the whole
And there are more aspects to COVID than simply health.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can I just say, NPHET have been given a terms of reference with regards fighting COVID, and they've been doing a great job within that terms of reference. But the truth of the matter is, the government have been given a different terms of reference by the people of Ireland, and it's a far broader terms of reference, and it includes every single bit of the aspects that we've been discussing. And I honestly believe that we need to have an eye for all the different aspects. I just think
ministers do, Padraig. I don't know why you think
right
that,
now, for example,
that they don't.
If there's a person with a mental health issue who wants to get a face-to-face, in-person consultation with a counsellor or psychiatrist, they can't get it in many parts of the country at the moment. And there's so many other aspects of society that have been shut down or closed down or stopped. And, you know, we just need to be very careful that in focusing on one issue, that we don't end up causing more damage in all the rest of society.
Oh, look, I think that is an important point, but let John Halligan, because he's been trying to get in.
I think this is very, very important, that if you look at all the associated health issues outside of the terrible health issue with COVID, we have no statistics, for instance. We have statistics from the guards about violence against women in the home. They reckon it's gone up 25 to 30%. Have the government done anything to get a reliable statistic? Self-harm, we have no statistics at all as to what's happening there. Depression, as Padder had said, and essential health interventions. Where are the statistics there as to what interventions have been stopped and what people have been affected? Because unless I'm living in Lapland, I'm meeting people all of the time who are saying, John, something's been cancelled on me. I was to see somebody. I can't see it. And this was happening. So, all of these statistics are part and parcel of how we live in society and how our society becomes a better place, a healthier place to live in, even dealing with COVID. And one other final point. We're talking about NPHET here. I tweeted out regarding the meat factories, and I spoke about the meat factories a long time ago, where we had 44 clusters in the meat factories, 266 cases in one meat factory in Cork that wasn't closed. The answer to my tweet by Professor Nolan was, well, these are all community transmissions. And I accept that. But the community transmission was carried in to the meat factory with 44 clusters. Where did we work from there? We bussed people in Waterford to a meat factory in buses with standing room only. We didn't close the meat factory in Cork with 266 cases. If this was a factory anywhere in any industrial estate in Ireland where you had 266 cases, it would be closed. So we can see that not everything's been done right. And we have a right to question that. And we have a right to ask, as John Downing has said, why?
And as you say, there should be some forum, Lorraine. Some forum where those questions can be asked and should be answered.
Mm. Well, that forum is on the chamber, the Dáil Chamber floor every day when the Taoiseach takes leaders' questions and in the Seanad.
But see,
I'm going to stop because an issue close to your heart, Padraig, I want to get some time for it and we're running very late. I'm going to take a quick break, but we'll come back and talk about the assisted suicide bill after these.
The Late Debate with Katie Hannan on RTE Radio 1.
And you're welcome back. And on the time we have left, I want to talk about what is perhaps the last big social and moral ethical issue facing modern Ireland. And that is, depending on which side of the debate you're on, either about dying with dignity or about assisted suicide. A private member's bill that would allow for a change in the legislation proposed by the independent TD Gino Kelly comes before the Dáil tomorrow. But John Halligan, this is pretty much the same bill as you yourself introduced back in 2015. And you've been campaigning for this for a long time.
Yes, it's the same bill. And I spoke to Gino on a number of occasions. And this arose out of a High Court and a Supreme Court decision. It was a landmark decision. A challenge was made by Mary Fleming, that's Tom Curran's partner, who was critically ill. And that was 2013, I think. And she was, her situation was deteriorating with multiple sclerosis, terrible disease. And she wanted a right, if she wasn't able to take her own life and to pass peacefully away without extreme pain, to allow someone to do it. Justice Susan Denton made an interesting comment at the time. She said there was nothing to stop the Oireachtas from legislating, to bring in legislation. And that's how that legislation came in. And the legislation is about personal autonomy, reduce suffering, shorten the unbearable dying process for people. I will say this, that all of us deserve a quality of life free from violence, debt, rape, murder, starvation. But we also deserve a dignity in death. And there are many people who do not have that dignity in death, who suffer unbearable, unimaginable pain, where their medical condition, if you like, is simply too painful and it's unnecessary prolonged with medicine. And even at that stage, the medicine is unable to alleviate the suffering they get through palliative care. Are we seriously saying that we allow people like that to suffer on for maybe 6 months, 12 months, where there's an inevitability about the process they're going to die anyway?
I think that's wrong. Okay, I want to leave Padder, yeah, Tobin response.
I had a meeting today with the Irish Palliative Medicine Consultants Association, and these are the people who work on the front line of palliative care in this country and deal with maybe about 15 or 20,000 people every year who are in this situation. And they are radically opposed to a change in the law, not just in Ireland, but in countries like Sweden and in Norway and Finland and Britain. You know, people who work with people who are in at end of days are opposed to this. And the reason that they are opposed to it is because there are cases, like John has illustrated, that are very, very difficult situations that anybody with a heart would break to see happen and would want to help with all they can. But they feel that if you legislate for those one or two or three cases a year, it affects thousands of other people in end-of-life situations. And the reason they do is because, first of all, in countries that introduce this, the numbers rise radically very, very quickly. So in the Netherlands and Belgium and in Canada, thousands of people avail of assisted suicide on an annual basis. And also people who are older in very vulnerable situations often feel that they are a burden on society and feel nearly a pressure to hasten the end of their lives. And, you know, that's not just a kind of a feeling. There's actually been surveys carried out amongst people who are at the end of life and asked, why is it that they're considering assisted suicide? None of them have said it's because of pain or because of fear. They've said it's because they feel that they're a burden on society. And as
so
a
result, absolutely nobody that, was going for assisted suicide.
I'm not saying that nobody. In the report of the survey.
That is what you just said.
In the survey that I'm... That was carried out in Oregon a number of years ago. The major results there was that people feel a stress and feel that they're a burden on society, and as a result, that they feel that they need to go down this. And I think it is shocking in this country that at a time when we should be investing more in palliative care, where we should be valuing older people more, and making sure that people don't feel that they're a burden, we should be protecting these people. Now we're going down a route that has been rejected in many other countries of assisted suicide.
You keep mentioning older people. This is about people that may not be old. This is about people who are terminally ill with an incurable and progressive illness which cannot be reversed by treatment and are likely to die anyway as a result of the complications related.
Terminal illnesses can go on for 3, 4, 5 years. And the bill that is before the Dáil does not give a time limit with regards the level of terminal illness. And the second thing is...
My bill gave 6 months.
Well, this doesn't.
But presumably all bills can be amended if there's issues like that.
This is the exact reason why the government is suggesting that the matter goes before a special Oireachtas committee, because it is a very complex medical, ethical and legal area. And, you know, I think from talking to colleagues across both houses of the Oireachtas, they want an opportunity to sit down with the experts, mull over the information and
come to... Do you think it would pass tomorrow if there was a free vote?
I think a lot of people haven't actually considered it and haven't settled on a position.
The Labour Party have come out in favour of this bill.
Yes, we have come
out
in favour of it. And I think a lot of people actually have had these conversations at home. There isn't a family in Ireland that hasn't been affected by seeing someone suffering, and they may come down on either side of this. But these are conversations that are actually happening in people's houses. These are difficult conversations. Yes. And actually, I think we as legislators need to face up to this. We can't keep shying away and saying this is too hard, this is too difficult. This is happening every single day in people's lives.
It's not a matter of the government saying it's too hard or difficult.
And actually take
debate needs to be had. The debate needs to be had. And actually, Lorraine's right. There needs to be proper scrutiny of this. And in fairness, I spoke to TDs about this. They said this had crept up on them and they hadn't given it the due consideration that needed. For example, many people wouldn't realise that suicide often increases in the general public when you introduce assisted suicide, because the government can't say that, you know, a suicide is never the right.
That's inflammatory.
That is not inflammatory.
That is inflammatory. He just said
suicide can often rise in the general population when you...
I've never seen that. We have three opinion polls in Ireland have shown that we're in favour of it.
John, apologies, but we are in fact all out of time, Katie. And we're going to have to leave there, but I'm for sure we will be back discussing this issue again. But I want to thank you all for a very lively debate this evening, and I want to thank you all out there for listening. That's all we have time for. The programme was produced by Brian Lally. Research was by Andrew Fleming. The broadcast coordinator tonight was Elaine Conlon, and Mark McGrath was on sound. And now it's over. A little late, apologies to Colin Murray on Late Date.